comic creators, artists, writers, world builders, this is your call to action. Here at Talking Comics, we love diving into the stories behind the story. Whether you're just starting out or you've been in the game for years, we want to hear your journey, your creative process, and what fuels your imagination. So, ready to talk comics with us? Message us or hit the link in our bio and be a guest on Talking Comics.
Welcome to Talking Comics. We have Mike Alger with us today. So before we jump into the comics, tell us about yourself.
Thanks for having me, first of all. Name's Mike Alger. For all intents and purposes, I am the guy behind Dork Arts Comics and the characters and stories I try to tell within that little universe that I'm trying to expand, bit by bit. And hopefully, I'm trying to have a little bit of fun while doing it.
Heck yeah. I like that. So your comic, I got to read, you sent me the trade paperback and a bunch of other pictures and stuff. I got to read the first story in the trade paperback. That was, I really enjoyed that. It was talking about, I don't know what is he called? Like, what do you call him? Is he's not a machine. He's a person, right?
Yeah. You read Burn Unit. My guy, my guy Bernie. He's not a machine. So like, he's essentially, he's the first character I created in that world. And he's essentially, like this big lava rock, he is human, and like I haven't gotten into like how he ended up that way, very sort of like a tragic hero sort of thing, and I haven't gotten into like how he ended up that way, but he's like essentially like this walking lava rock, and he has this suit on him, not necessarily to protect himself, from other people, but more so to protect other people from him because of like the heat that his body radiates. And so it's more so for them than it is for him. And that's kind of the design that I was going with. And, that's who Bernie is. And, the first story, is like basically a big flashback around, and like it's him in therapy talking about, his experiences and this sort of reluctancy to like be this sort of heroic character and this heroic person and, do something about these things that are going on. And even though he kind of wants to be left alone and, doesn't necessarily like feel good about himself right now, and like him dealing and working through that.
I really enjoyed the back and forth throughout the story between like the therapist and Bernie, right?
Is that what I call him? Yeah.
The dialogue back and forth between them throughout the whole issue was fantastic. I said, it was like a flashback.
I
like that a lot.
Thank you.
It's got to be very relatable to somebody that's wanting to go to therapy or start therapy. Like, it's like he's going through all those emotions of wanting to start and the scare, being scared to start and stuff. I thought that was very relatable. I thought it was very cool.
Thank you.
So go into that. What was the inspiration behind that?
But behind Bernie or behind like the whole, so
your whole idea. Yeah.
So,
cause you told me you like to incorporate a lot of those kind of elements in your stories.
Yeah. I mean, so like in my day world, in my real world, I am a therapist, so like I do this stuff with people every day, and I have been functioning as a clinician, a therapist, in one form or another for almost the last 15 years. But I've also been a huge comic nerd, like all my life. And like, I loved reading them and just absorbing as much as I could. And then, I got into playing an online video game, DC Universe Online. And, okay, you know, and that's where I sort of made the first burn unit, the first Bernie, and make this character, throw him into these worlds with all these other people playing their characters. And then you get into the forums and you start reading like fan fiction, and you know, you start writing your own and working through all of that. And then that got me back into reading comics on a regular basis. And then I ended up picking up this little 3-issue Batman miniseries. And I remember reading it and I'm like, this is like Batman doesn't talk like this. Like, this is just like way too wordy for a Batman story. And I was just kind of like, did Alan Moore write this? Like, what happened? Like, it's just like so densely worded. And I was like, I could write a better story than, and then like, I was like, oh, wait a minute. People make their own stuff all the time. And so I started like kind of writing this little story about this, my character, and then trying to find an artist. And because like I couldn't draw worth a lick at that time. We're going back probably like 12 years ago or something. Like I couldn't draw worth a lick. And trying to find someone, ended up connecting with this one person, and they kind of flaked out on me a little bit before anything really got off the ground. And then I was just like kind of taking, you know, Thanos at the end of that post-credit scene, just like, fine, I'll just do it myself. And I taught myself how to draw, you know, learning the fun, like some of the basics, and just practice, getting better at it. And then started putting together pages, you know, penciling and inking. And I use that word sparingly because those first pages were not, you know, they exist. And then it just, okay. Then I was trying to find a colorist and like, you know, somebody to like put this stuff together. And I'm like, well, I mean, I've done it. I've done this much. Like, let me just, like, so like then the goal became, can I just make a comic start to finish? Like, can I just, you know, from here, can I get a physical book in my hand that I did? And got a tablet, got a program, you know, learned, taught myself it. And then I did the first burn unit book, had some characters that I was kind of playing around with and figuring out like, okay, what do I want to do? Like, what stories do I want to tell? And like, I like the idea of like, okay, you can lift a bus over your head. You can shoot fire from your hands, or, you know, I have, you know, other characters like, you know, Sydney, she's my monster hunter girl. Adrian, he's my wizard, my sorcerer, if, you know, John Constantine wasn't a jerk. And then Anne, kind of like my, you know, kind of the psionic of the group, but like, and she's in a band and, you know, but it's like, she doesn't fit in because her abilities sort of like make her feel like I can't really connect with people. And so it's, there's all these elements of like, I can do these things, but like at what cost? And, you know, how do I actually feel about this? And like the idea of like working through those things and, you know, coming to terms with it, accepting it, you know, learning how to channel it, you know, in ways that are, you know, helpful and productive for you. Like, I just kind of like those ideas, but also being able to laugh, you know, like, you know, little snarky comments or like just this element of like humor between the characters and the people they're interacting with, and just being able to laugh at some things. You know, I like to put those things in there in the stories as well, because it's comics and you don't, it's supposed to be fun, right?
Yeah. You got to have the fun in it, right?
Yeah.
So go, you said you got a tablet. So do you do all you? So you do the digitally, the art digitally. What software are you using?
I was using Krita initially, just because it was free, and you know that kind of helps. And I liked Krita. I liked it a lot. I did the first two books on Krita, and then I switched over to Clip Studio Paint. You know, and I just love Clip Studio Paint. I would recommend Krita for anyone who is looking to get started. You know, it functions very much like Photoshop. Can do a lot of the same.
Done a lot of Photoshop.
Can do a lot of the same things as Photoshop, but it's free.
Right, it's free.
Yeah, I liked Clip Studio just because it was built more for comics, like in mind.
Okay.
And just the assets and the tools that are built into it and that you have access to, like, I very much enjoy Clip Studio. And so, like, yeah, I pencil my pages on, you know, Bristol board, like on my illustration board. And then I'll scan them and then I'll digitally line them and ink them and color them and letter them all in Clip Studio.
Very cool. So I'm in the process. I'm, you know, I created this whole Panel Pete character.
Yeah.
You know, got the hat and t-shirt. merch available. No, I got to get my plug in. Check the link in the description. But I started writing, actually, you know, over the last few weeks of doing these interviews, you know, I've been inspired, right? And I created this character more as a mascot for the podcast, right? Hey. Just to have some fun with and for, you know, the thumbnails and stuff on, you know, socials. But I was like, you know, this character is endless, like endless possibilities. So I started I actually wrote a page and a half worth of a script the other day. So I'm going to try to flesh it out and create a Panel Pete comic book. But I don't, yeah, like you, I'm okay. Like, I'm not good at hand drawing. I do a lot of graphic design stuff. Like, most of everything that he is right now is all graphics.
Okay.
Just assembled graphics, you know, in Canva. But I don't know. I've been looking for an artist. But, you know, it's hard to find one. So,
right.
I don't know. If I'm going to do it myself, I don't think I want to do it myself. I want to try to have somebody else draw it, but we'll see. We'll get there eventually.
Right.
So, what does it look like for you? Like, do you sit down? Like, what do you need with you? Like, what's your rituals when you start creating or drawing?
Well, if I'm penciling like a page, like if I'm just sketching stuff out and, you know, laying out panels or, you know, pages, I'll, depending on if I'm at home, you know, I have a table I sit at. I like to put on like documentaries. Like, there's like a Jack Kirby documentary that I like listening to on YouTube, just because in some way I feel like it helps me channel the mastery that is Jack Kirby.
Jack Kirby, right? You know? Yeah,
and you 100%. Know, like, I will listen to that, and I have listened to it 1,000 times, and I will listen to it 1,000 more, just because, like, it just, I don't know, it just puts something in the air to me. I also like watching that new Mike Mignola documentary on Amazon, Drawing Monsters. Like, I like listening to that. You know, and then, like, so, like, I try to put something on comics related, just to, like, if nothing else, for this kind of, like, background noise. And, you know, it puts some sort, I don't know, for me, it feels like it puts some creative energy, like, in the air. And some of my favorite pages I've drawn, like, I can look at it and go, like, oh, I was listening to the Jack documentary. I was listening to the Mike. I don't know, just something about it.
Yeah.
And then if I'm inking or if I'm coloring, like, again, I have my table and I'll, you know, set up my, you know, my tablet or whatever. And you know, similar thing. If I can, I'll put something on, or like if my daughter is watching something on TV, I'm, you know, 10 feet from her. If my wife's doing something, like I'm right there, and it's easier for me to like hit the save button and like just go if they need to do something, or if we got to go somewhere, I can walk away from it a lot easier than, you know, right, if I'm penciling or whatever. So I try to pencil by myself, like when I have time for myself, but the coloring, the lettering, I can just kind of come back to in and out.
Come back to. Yeah. What's the biggest creative challenges you faced?
Getting over self
learning.
Self.
Yeah.
Because I've just started doing shows the last couple of years. And I mean, I've gone to shows a lot.
Oh, like, so you're like you have a booth at a convention, yeah, or something.
I'm actually, okay, cool. Tomorrow, Friday, I'm actually tabling at Terrificon at the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut here.
Okay. So you're in Connecticut.
Yep.
So that's on my bucket list. I have to go. So I'm trying to hit all 50. It won't happen this year. It's going to get close.
You'll get there.
I'm at 46 at the moment. So, or no, 45. I'll be at 46 at the end of the month. I'm going to Alaska at the end of the month. So, but weirdly enough, I grew up in upstate New York, and I've been to New Hampshire, Vermont, and Maine.
Okay.
But weirdly enough, I've never been to Massachusetts, Connecticut, or Rhode Island. So I have to do that little loop. So I can't go this weekend, but it'd be awesome if I could. You'll have to keep me posted on your shows, and I'll tie a show into that trip.
Absolutely. Yeah. Terrificon, you know, it's this weekend, it's the 10-year anniversary of the show.
Sweet.
And oddly enough, Terrificon was the first show I ever went to as like a patron.
Okay.
And then I've met a lot of like just amazingly talented people there and had a lot of really great experiences at that show just as a patron. And now 10 years later, I'm tabling at it with a lot of those, alongside a lot of those same people. And, you know, but then like, in shows, like I know there are shows that say Comic-Con in the title, but having been to some of them, they're more, and nothing against it, but like they're more like pop culture
events. Yeah.
But Terrificon is still very much like a comics focus, comics creators, writers, you know, people like very much focused still on comics. So, and people that I know who have done that show have said, like, yeah, you have to do this show. Like, it's just, it's a really great one to do. And then seeing the guest list at that show and like, okay, I'm going to be in the same room with, you know, like some guy named Kevin Eastman, you know, some other dude named like Mark Silvestri, you know, like, I don't know, maybe you've heard of him. I don't know.
Yeah, I've heard those names.
Like two of my favorite artists. And I'm like, I am at the same show with these people. Like, what God did I please? Like,
right. What happened? That's awesome.
So it's, I'm really looking forward to this weekend. And I know I'm going to get worked up, but like, as I get settled, I know I'll be okay. And, right, you know,
so the original question to that started was like, you know, the challenge of that. So like, what was it like when you went to your first convention?
Tabling?
Tabling, having a booth.
My first show that I tabled at was Rhode Island Comic Con back in 2021. Right after like COVID stuff got, you know, lifted a little bit. And I did that one because it, like, that show was very like personal to me in terms of like people I've met, experiences I had, and like getting things stuck in my head of like, no, you can do this. And like, it's just kind of getting over, like, the challenge is like getting over that self-doubt of like, okay, because like you're in a room and like there are some like legit professionals in that room and like amazingly talented people. And, you know, it's like getting over the idea of like, you know, okay, you don't have to be that to be good. Like, you know, just because you can't do that doesn't mean you're not good. And it doesn't mean that your work doesn't have less of a value, you know. And it's just kind of getting over that like voice of like, you know, that negative self-talk, that, you know, that feeling of like imposter syndrome, like,
right.
You know, and just that, like, you know, trusting your stuff and trusting and understanding what you're doing and why you're doing it. And, you know, like, I'm not a guy that is just trying to sell pretty pictures, you know, like, I want to tell stories, and I know the stories I want to tell, and I'm trying to tell and learning how to do that better with each one, you know. So just kind of like learning from the mistakes you made, you know, previously, because you're going to make them, you know, you're going to make mistakes, and just learn from them.
So what's one of the mistakes you made that you learned from?
Like creatively?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. We don't have to go back into like life or anything.
Oh, okay. All right.
We don't have to go back to like, well, when I was 9 years old. No, we don't have to go there.
So,
trying to start a podcast but feeling stuck? At Aquatio, we help creators make waves with everything you need to bring your voice to life. Hosting, recording, editing, and marketing. Whether you're starting from scratch or just need a little help polishing your sound, we're here to hydropower your creativity. Comment on this video or DM us today and let's dive in.
In my first book, in the first Burn Unit book, I didn't understand how to stack and organize my layers effectively, like to create the finish that I wanted. And I also didn't understand opacity. And so like the colors were like very saturated and heavy and muddy because I didn't understand opacity.
Yeah, opacity is awesome.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's really important in the coloring process. And, you know, and then I figured that out. And then with the, opacity was the first one. Layer order and stacking was the second one. And just kind of putting things in certain, you know, order so that it looks the way you want it to look, and that it looks like it's not just a bunch of stuff stacked on top of each other. The third book was the Adrian Hodges book. He's like, again, he's my sorcerer wizard guy. That one I was trying to pay attention to like the lettering, you know, like, you know, not so that it just doesn't look like a sticker thrown over, you know, an image, and like making sure it fits with the tone of the scene, what you're using it for, the coloring, so that it looks like it belongs there. And then my fourth book, you know, like paying attention to like you know, kind of just taking all the mistakes from those previous three books and like making sure I just didn't make them in this one. And then those four I did. And then I had a book, a little short one, a little 8-pager I did called Cannoli Girl. And that one was fun to do. It was just like, you know, a way to like pay homage to like all those like cheesy comic tropes and stuff like that. And with this character who has no superpowers whatsoever, you know, and just this comedically large cannoli that she fights crime with. And then you know, I did that. The one I just finished was this book of like little comic strips of this character, Finn Ankles. He's like this personified cat that like drinks too much and runs his mouth and gets himself in trouble. And I'm trying to like play around with like the coloring style and like make it not so rendered and polished and make it look like, you know, a little bit more comic strippy, you know, and just trying something different. I mean, all these characters exist in the same world with each other and cross over in some places. And, but like, you know, just learning from mistakes and learning how to do a little bit better and remembering to have fun with it all. And, you know, hopefully somebody likes it.
Yeah. I mean, they seem really good. I did see some of the Mr. Fiskers, or Mr. Fisk's, the cat one. I saw some of those images that you sent me. Those were pretty funny.
Thank you.
That was one of my next questions. So it's all one big kind of world universe, you know, like, do you have any like Easter eggs that go into like homages to the old issues or any fun stuff like that?
In the first book, like some of little Easter eggs, like I put a picture of like one of my dogs in the background. Like I drew a little picture of one of my bulldogs or some of the addresses and stuff like that, or like, you know, composites of places I've lived. And, you know, there's references in like some of the books I've made to like the X-Men and like, you know, like the therapist's like, you know, special academy for like gifted kids. And like, not that like the X-Men exist in my world, but the comics exist in my world. I've, you know, stuff like that. Finn, the cat character, and Sid have this, you know, dynamic between each other, because like he owes her money from like, you know, stuff, and he doesn't pay up on his debts. And he actually came into existence because he was just this background character that I had in a drawing that I did of her. And I always liked him, and I was like, okay. And I put him there to like kind of suggest that like she exists in a world where these not human things exist. But I kept going back and looking at him for years, and I'm like, I got to do something with him. And through a series of events, I came up with a name for him and started drawing these little silly strips, and it was just fun. And, you know, and it just took on a life of its own. And Cannoli Girl and Bernie cross over in her comic, and the trade paperback has all those first issues of all those characters. And then there is this, how many pages was it? Like a 8 or 12 page story of all of them kind of coming together to fight this common fight.
Is that in that trade?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And,
you sent me the copy of that, so I want to get it. Yeah. Look at it.
And, you know, looking at, you know, again, being a therapist in my day job, like looking at what I started doing, I'm like, oh, like there's elements of like gestalt therapy in this, of like these four characters all represent some part of me, you know, not to like, you know, but like they all represent some aspect of me. And then it's like taking these segmented, fractured pieces of yourself and bringing it together, you know, in, you know, this whole entity, you know. And I think in some ways, like this whole comics thing has been this massive exercise in self-care for myself, not to be redundant or whatever, but like this idea of like what started out as a hobby and this little time killer thing turned out to be something very fulfilling to me. And you know, in this exercise in self-care that I preach to people on the daily.
Right.
And I got to start taking my own advice. And, but also like,
all right, I have to ask this.
Go ahead.
Have you ever given your book to a patient?
Or
recommended it to a patient?
No.
Okay.
A lot of my clients, like the ones that I've seen for a long time, like they know I draw and they know that I make stuff and that I have an interest in, you know, in comics, because I have comic artwork, you know, up on my walls. And, but like, I've never given it to them and I've never recommended it to them. Not only because, like, I don't, like, I'm still trying to, you know, it's a confidence thing for me, but it's also like, nah, this is crossing over too much. Like,
right. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know if that was going to cross the line or something, but I could see that being a, you know, something you could do. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, they know I do it and they know that I enjoy it, you know, but I've never recommended it and I've never, like, given one to them.
Hey, that's all right. So what is one thing that people don't realize when making comics at this level? Like, you, like, one thing you wish you knew before when you started?
That, you know, it's not just making it. Like, it's this, you have to let people know you're doing it. Like, because making comics is a very solitary thing. It's like this sort of, like, I don't want to say isolating feels too, like, not feels too heavy, but it's something we do.
What you don't want, or people to realize that are starting out, like, one thing you wish you knew when you started.
It's like that you got to promote it in some way. You got to, like, you know, because again, making comics is this solitary thing. Like, we kind of do it alone at a table, you know, in a room, you know, and you draw it, you color it, you letter it, and you make it. That's awesome. That's half the battle, you know, but then you got to let people know that you're doing it. And I suck at that part of it. Like, I am terrible.
The marketing's hard for everybody.
So bad at it. Like, I, you know, I make these comics and it's like, I let some people know I'm doing it, but, like, you have to, like, you know, it's important to go to shows. It's important to do podcasts and let people know that you're doing it. And as much time as you make for the drawing, the inking, the coloring, and all that stuff, you know, you also have to let people know that you're doing it, you know? And that, you know, is something I wish I knew more. Like, I wish I knew how to do earlier and how to make time for, like, earlier, you know, because,
right,
you know, and those things take time, and it's hard to balance the time between doing that and, you know, having a family, having a business, and, you know, and those things obviously are priorities, and, like, you know, just right, carving out a little bit of time here and there to go to shows, to talk to people and let people know that you're doing it so that they can, you know, look into it, read it, come see you, you know, do that thing.
That's something, yeah. We're dealing, you know, the same thing. I've been kind of in that world. I used to own a hobby shop.
Okay.
Wrestle board games, card games. But then we would do shows. And then I did accessories, where I made accessories for miniature games. And we'd go to shows. But you have to do those things to, like, get the word out and get the thing out. And that's something with this podcast. You know, we want to start doing shows. We're going to go to one, like, local one this weekend, just as a, you know, patron. But I do want to start doing, you know, booth tabling, like you said.
Right.
You know, have a booth table, you know.
Yeah.
Spread the word on the podcast. And then hopefully I'll have my own comic to sell eventually if I finish writing it. And, but yeah, that's the hardest part, is marketing. And then the social media, you know, you're every day I'm posting stuff, you know, to try to spread the word.
Yeah, and so, it becomes,
I mean, that's how I found you, or you found me. Right. So,
and it becomes like, yeah, you know, it becomes like a little, I mean, job in a way, like a little, like, you know, like, cause it's, right, it's work to, like, put it out there, promote it, talk about it, you know, and it takes a lot of work.
And not be scared what people say, like, who cares, mm-hmm, you know, there's going to be haters, there's going to be lovers of it. So, you know,
right,
just do it, as Nike says.
Right. And I remember this documentary from, I saw on Todd McFarlane, and he said something in the documentary that kind of mirrors what you just said. He was like, once you understand and accept that not everybody's going to like your stuff, you're free to do whatever you want. And I heard that and I'm like, yeah, okay, I think Todd McFarlane knows what he's talking about.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's done a couple of things. I really am enjoying the Deadly Tales of a Gunslinger series that's going on right now. Yeah. It's so good. So good. Oh, man. So which character of yours is your favorite?
I mean, it's hard enough.
I won't tell him, I promise.
Okay, all right. Who's my favorite child?
Somebody hit me with that one. They're like, oh, I can't pick. Which one's your favorite kid? Because I have two daughters.
Right. And I'm like,
okay, touche, fine. Yeah. You know.
I love them all for different reasons.
Exactly.
I mean, I would
all equally.
You know, I mean, it's hard not to say Bernie just because, like, he was the first one. He was the one that kind of, like, jumped all this off. And I think of the personalities and quirks and idiosyncrasies that, you know, I try to give my characters, I think he's the one that is closest to who I am and the closest to who I am trying to be. Or, you know, the things that I am personally like working on in my life, he's probably the closest to me out of all of them. I would probably say him. In my professional life, probably, you know, a little bit more Sid, a little bit more Adrian in some ways. But personally, Bernie is probably like the closest to me out of all of them.
What do you want readers to feel like when they read your issue? Like, what do you want them to walk away with when they read your comics?
Okay. I thought I knew how I was going to answer this stuff.
Yes, I still tripped him up.
Yeah, all right. Still got it. Probably that, like, I don't know, like, it's okay to not be okay sometimes. You know, that, you know, you're not always gonna be 100% and that's okay. And it's okay to, like, you know, be a little down. It's okay to talk about these things too. Like, these are not like these, you know, deep, dark secrets that we have to hold on to, and that there are people out there and places that you can turn to like air it out, to get some help and not feel like you have to carry it all by yourself.
I love that. I don't know. You said you watched some of the episodes that I've done. Yeah. It always comes to this kind of stuff. And I'm loving that this is part of the community that's coming out and must need to be coming out, because this topic gets brought up a lot in these episodes. But I love what you said. You know, it's okay. And I've heard it a lot. It's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
You know, I've told myself that over the last 6 months, probably 100 times, you know, and it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody's going to have a great day every day.
No,
you know,
no.
And I thought, you know, and that's what made me ask that question about, you know, if you ever given it to one of your customers, they are customers, but you know, patients.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I really felt that through the whole reading that, you know, the Bernie issue is, you know, the dialogue back and forth and him facing the fear of going and, you know, starting, and like, man, I could see how that could relate and help so many people, you know, and it's almost like that is your marketing for your day job, you know?
Yeah. And in a lot of ways,
whether they come see you or not, but, you know,
in a lot of ways, that's kind of why I grew some of the stuff the way that I did. Cause like Bernie's this like big 8-9 foot walking lava rock. And, you know, that's why I drew him like splayed out, like on the couch, and he's like engulfing the whole, but like, you know, even when he met like the therapist for the first time face to face, it's like, here's this giant thing And he's like, you know, like this tiny little therapist, and he's just like, hi, like, how's it going? And like he's right. nervous and he's uncomfortable and working through that. And, you know, like, okay, yeah, like, yeah, here's this entity, here's this character who can lift a car and tear a car in half and do these things, but like having to and do it like without any real effort, you know, but then to like sit and talk about like that he feels like a freak, you know, and that's the hard part, you know, and like, you know, you can do these things, but like, okay, but like, what is it? What is that to you?
Who's your dream collaborator?
You know, anybody that knows me is like a comics nerd. Like, if I could do anything with Sam Keith, okay, just because, like,
what did he do?
He did the Max. Okay. He was part of that second iteration of the Image world. And Sam Keith, you know, he worked for Marvel, you know, he worked for DC. You know, most people probably know him from the Max at Image Comics, and like, I think that was 94 or 96. I saw it on the stand when like Image came out. I saw Spawn, I saw these things on the stands, but I was like a little bit too young to like really get it. You know, I was still like going through the dollar bins, like looking for the Iron Man and stuff like that. And,
right.
And I was just too young to like really get it. And I was almost a little intimidated by it. But then when I went back and like got it and read it and like just his style, there's like this cartoony element to it, which I try to like, you know, poorly emulate, you know, like I am not nearly the ink slinger that Sam Keith is. And, but like, I try to like, you know, his page layouts, like in just do something non-traditional and these things that are sort of like panels and pages, but it's an image unto itself. And, but also like, if you read that Max series, there is a lot of like psychology to it. Like there is like, you know, the book is not about the Max. The series is actually about Julie, the girl who's like the other main character, and like her working through her trauma and her, you know, stuff. But, you know, so like because of his art style, the nature of like his storytelling, like I would give my drawing hand to do something like with him.
So I didn't ask this earlier, but when we were talking about the creating process, so you do all the artwork yourself, but you also write them yourself. So how do you write your script first? Like, what do you do first? Do you write your script first? Do you just write a story first? How does that work?
Like, writing feels like a very generous term. Give me a lot of credit that like don't know. So like the way that I write, so like I have the characters, and it's like, okay, I kind of think about it in the sense of like animation in a way. And like, so I have like a start frame, and like this is what I want to show at the start. And like I have the start of the story, I have that first frame, that first page in mind, and like what I want to show on that page. And then I know that I want to get from here to this other keyframe, and it's like, okay, how do I fill in the gaps between this page and this in a way that makes sense? And a lot of the ways that I like, in terms of the stories I try to tell, like I think about like who these characters are in terms of their personality, their struggles, and like what are they trying to work through. And then like a lot of like I listen, like anybody else, I listen to a lot of music, I listen to things, and you know, I'll hear a line in a song, and because music, like any other art form, is meant to elicit a response in us. And like I'll hear a line, I'll hear, you know, something. And I'm like, oh, that is what I'm trying to convey with this character. That's what I'm trying to convey in this character, in this story. And like, I write those lines down, and then taking that approach of like, okay, here's the first part of the story. Here's the first page I want to show. Here's the sixth page I want to show. And here's what I want to see on this scene. And like, how do I fill in the gaps between those in a way that makes sense, that feels like authentic to the character, that, you know, and I repeat that process over, you know, 24 or 30 pages at a time.
That, yeah, the key, that keyframe is a excellent analogy for that. Cause I was, when I was writing my page and a half, I wrote the other, like you said, writing is a generous, you know, term. When I was typing a page and a half of words, I kept going back and forth between telling a story, like writing a story and writing a script.
Yeah.
Like what I wanted to see on like this page versus, okay, but I really, I'd go a little bit on the page and be like, all right, well, I want this to happen. But then I was like, well, what does that look like in the world, like in my mind? So like, okay, so I go up here and I'd start writing just a story about that, right? A few sentences, and I'm like, oh, but then I want it to look like this. I'd go back down. So I was like back and forth. And then I would get an idea like, well, this actually should come first. So let me add this up here. And it's like, oh man. So I'm looking forward to this like 6-hour plane ride I'm about to be on in a couple weeks to Seattle. Cause I'm going to use that 6 hours to type.
Yeah.
So that's my goal.
There you go.
All right, cool. What advice do you have for aspiring creators? Like myself.
I am going to have to quote Mike Doherty on this. This is a guy, Mike Doherty is an artist that I got to meet at Rhode Island Con back in 21, and somebody that I look up to a lot from being at shows with him. And, you know, I owe a lot to him getting my butt in gear to like, I went to Rhode Island Con, and I'm going to answer the question. I promise. I'm going to.
No, you're fine. Take your time. Unless you've got somewhere to go. I've got more time.
No, I got, so. I'm good.
Okay.
I was at Rhode Island Con in 21 and no, 17. I'm sorry. 17. And I was looking for some panels to go sit at and listen to. And there were these guys that were, you know, essentially carnival barking because there was this impromptu panel that got thrown together on indie comics publishing and stuff like that. And Mike Doherty was part of it. I didn't know him at the time, but he was part of this panel. And, you know, they're talking about indie creation, whether it's comics, you know, novels, movies, stuff like that, just doing it yourself. And, you know, all really good information and stuff like that. And then like any other panel, there's Q&A time, you know, where you get to ask questions. And I nervously stood up and, you know, was like, you know, at that point, I think I had only 3 pages inked of the first Bernie book. And I was like, you know, what would you tell someone that wants to be down on the floor behind the tables and like, but doesn't feel like they can do it as well as other people are doing it down there? Because, you know, you have some just phenomenally talented people down there. And everybody gave, you know, really good answers. And then, you know, they turned it over. They were, you know, Mike, you know, got to Mike and he said, you know, I would tell him, show up and finish something. You know, he was like, and he went on to talk about like, you know, you go, you talk to people and you ask them what they're doing and like, oh, I have this idea for this story and it's this, it's this, it's this. And it sounds all really great. And it's like, oh, like, can I read it? And it was like, oh, I've only got like 2 pages done or I've only got like 1 page drawn or whatever, you know, but it's like, he's like, you will be amazed at like how much opportunity you can find if you can show people that you can just finish a project. And whether that is a full comic, whether that is, you know, even finishing a 2-page strip, like if you can show people that you can start something and finish something and you're not an asshole to work with, you know, it's amazing how much opportunity you can find, you know, because you can, people will know that you can finish a project. And that, so like, I would tell them, you know, show up and finish something, whether that is, like I said, a cover. If you're just doing a cover for something, if you are shooting a 5-minute short, you know, of a film, like if you can just show that this is what I wanted to do and this is what I did and I finished it, it is, A, you're going to feel so much better about yourself because you're like, oh, I can actually do this. Like, I can do this. And then other people are going to go like, oh, yeah, no, he made that thing. Or you're like, oh, yeah, they're the guy that did that thing. And it's, you're going to have work out there to show. So, like, that's my advice. You know, it's my turn to tell somebody else that. Like, just show up and finish something.
What opportunity did you get from doing that? Would you say?
What opportunity did I get?
Well, you said, so he said that you'd be amazed at what opportunities open up if you can just show that you finished something, right? So does any of that relate to you in particular?
Opportunity in the sense of like, yeah, like I've had stuff to take to shows. Like I've actually had work
to
shows. And
you're now tabling at shows. Yeah. That's your work. Like, you completed something.
I've got a portfolio full of prints that I'm selling there. And I've got books.
Okay.
And books that I, you know, and on the table I have a book that I didn't do, but I did a variant cover for someone. So like,
very cool.
And then I met a guy at a show and local guy to me, and we were talking, and it was, you know, his first show ever. It was my second show ever, and we were tabling across from each other. The guy's name is Brandon Cable, phenomenal artist. His book Rat Night, which is like a homage to, like, you know, Batman and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And like, I ended up buying an original page of his book because like, I thought it was that cool. But we were talking and he was doing the second one and we got to talking, and I did a variant cover for the second one and he did a variant cover for my Finn Ankles book. So
awesome.
I've got the variant cover edition of his book on my table at the show this weekend. And I've got his variant of my book on the table too. So, I mean, again, but like, awesome. You don't get that unless it's like, you can show people like, hey, like I can do this. And like, here's my work. And so, you know, those are the opportunities, is like, you know, people feel comfortable like talking with you and looking at your stuff, and you know, you have stuff to bring to places to show.
Right. See, and that was one of my holdbacks from going to shows at the moment, was I don't have anything, like, I guess I do have stuff done. I mean, this 28 episodes in, you know, which is crazy. Most podcasts don't make it past 20. Wow. So, you know, they give up or whatever. But I mean, this will be later than that. But I mean, I released 26 yesterday, so 27 I'll release tomorrow.
Right on,
so,
man.
You know, so I mean, we're in what, 7 or 8 months, we've done 28 episodes, which is pretty good. So
impressive.
Trying to do 2 a week. I'd like to get to 3 eventually, and it could happen, you know, because I'm getting a lot more traction with, you know, doing these interviews. I could probably get away with doing 2 of these a week. I'm going to hold for 1 a week right now and kind of build up a backlog. Mm-hmm. Just to see, but in my mind, for some reason, I feel like if I go to a convention, I have to have something to sell, but I really don't. I could just have advertise the podcast itself. Right. But I'm like, well, I need to have a book, you know, my own comic before I go. So I don't know. We'll see. I just got to get off my butt and do it.
Do the show from the convention, just, you know, have Panel Pete merch.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I could have that, yeah. You know, it's all on, you know, all on our links. I could buy some.
Right on.
I used to do that. I used to print shirts and stuff at conventions and dice trays. And I did a lot of mouse pad material type stuff. It was kind of crazy. But I had a heat press there. It was heat press and sublimating. It's crazy. I've done a lot in my life. It's crazy. That's why I love this podcast. Cause I was missing that entrepreneurial itch. That I need, and I needed something to fill that. And this is doing a really good job of filling that itch for me. So I'm glad I'm doing it. So I think that was the advice for aspiring creators, right? Yeah. So we talked about that one. This is before we get to the fun questions.
All right.
What is something we need to talk about that we haven't talked about? We're going to obviously we need to talk about where your books are available. Like, do you sell them online?
Or? No, I'm oddly a control freak about my stuff.
Okay.
So if somebody wants my book, you know, I am happy to get them one. They just need to message me on Instagram or email me. And I'll just, work out a payment, if it's PayPal or whatever. And then I'll just send them one. If they want prints, I just kind of all goes through me. I'm a small operation. So, if I don't have a website, I don't have a store, I don't have any of that stuff, I just have a closet in my art room
full of books.
Yeah. And if somebody wants one, I'm happy to send it out to them. And if somebody wants to talk to me about coloring something, commissioning something, doing a variant cover or something like that, I'm just Instagram, email, just write them.
So what does that look like? What is doing a variant deal look like?
It depends on who the person is. Me and the guy Brandon that I mentioned, he's a struggling artist just like the rest of us. And so he's also a cool dude, so I'm not gonna try to stick him or anything like that. The deal, deal that I had with him was hey, I'll do one for you, and just send me 10 copies of the book, that I can take to shows and put on the table. And he did one for me, and I sent him some copies of the book, and, we put each other's credits in the book, and it worked out like that. A lot of times, the indie community, at least the people that I've gotten to know through Instagram, which is, there are just some gangsters out there that are doing some crazy, awesome work. And I could spend an hour just singing all their praises.
Right.
But a lot of times it's and it kind of goes back to not being an asshole. If you show you can do decent work and you're not difficult to work with, it's hey, if you want a pinup for the back of the book, let me know. Hey, if you want a variant cover, let me know. And a lot of times it's okay, just if you want to send me a couple copies and then we're square, I will never turn down money for
right.
But, but that's where
Well, that was an idea I had the other day. I was like, man, it'd be really cool. If whenever I find an artist, if I end up finding an artist, obviously I want to pay them for their work, right? But I also want them to be able to make money on it after.
Yeah.
So it's how do they do that? So I was thinking, is it acceptable? So if you were my artist and I paid you to do the artwork, but then you could buy the books at wholesale, right? Like at the cost of the book and sell them yourself, right? And then you're at least making money on it too, like you just said, having it at your table because you did some, a variant cover of it or something. I think that's an awesome, awesome way to look at it and do it. So that's really cool. So to get your book, they got to message you on Instagram or go to a show that you're at. How many shows do you do a year?
I try to be selective, just because again, this isn't
family
and, careers. And also it's not my job. It's not how I support myself or my family. This is still very much a hobby and I love it. I enjoy doing it.
It's a hobby and it's your outlet, right?
Yeah.
It's your mental health outlet.
So tabling, I will probably maybe do one a year. Okay. I'm like, I'm very selective in that, you know, because I just, I know how much time I don't have to put into it. Right. I was planning for this show for like a year, you know, and because it's one that I've wanted to do for a long time, being my local show here in Connecticut. And
is this the first time you're tabling?
Yeah.
There?
Yeah. Sweet. So I'm going to go through the jitters tonight while I'm packing up for it. And I mean, like, but again, I'm also very lucky in that, like, it's 20 minutes from my house. So, like, I pack up, set up, do the day, cover over, come home, go back. I'm not paying for hotel. I'm not paying for airfare or anything like that.
Right.
And I get to come home at the end of the day. And, you know, knowing.
Well, I've already been booked for one in Michigan next, like Memorial Day next year. So that's like it's a friend of mine who does work for it. And I was like, hey, get me a media pass. He's like, I'll get you a booth. I'm like, okay, right. That's a good goal. At least now it's on paper. I've done shows before, you know, not as a comic part,
right.
But, you know, in the gaming industry, but so I don't mind that part, but this gives me a good goal. I'm hoping I'll beat that goal and do it sooner.
Yeah.
But this gives me a good, at least there's something on paper, on the calendar. It gives you something to strive for and it makes it real, you know?
So like, yeah, like I table it like maybe one a year, but I'll go as like a patron to maybe like two, maybe three a year, just to like bop around for the day, say hi to some people. But tabling probably like one a year.
Just usually your local ones up there?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we'll get you. I'll have to come to one of these days.
Right on.
That you're tabling it. I'll have to, maybe by next year. All right. So we got all those questions out of the way. Is there anything else that we need to say or cover that we didn't talk about yet?
You know, maybe if we take some time to talk about stocks and bonds and diversifying portfolios and, you know,
I am not the follow. No, I'm not going to say. I was gonna make a very bad joke, but stocks and bonds. I have none of the above. I don't think so. I have a 401k, barely. I'm going to work till the day I die.
Yeah.
But that's okay if I'm doing what I want to do. On. I don't mind.
Yeah.
So I'm very. That's why I got my day job that I do is they were a very small company and my oldest daughter started playing golf for them or in their program. They have an academy to, you know, teach golf. And I fell in love with what they did and they were very small and then to be of help and, you know, help them grow. And now they're all big and corporate and crazy and
awesome,
but good for them. But I don't like the corporate stuff. It's too big.
Right.
I like doing my own thing.
Yeah. But, yeah. I get it, man.
Well, cause do you own your own practice or your own business?
Yeah. I've been practicing on my own for, this is my third year.
Sweet. And congrats.
Thanks. And I am never going back.
Right.
Never going back.
Doing your own thing. I mean, I've helped other people do it too. And just doing your own thing is where it's at. And that's where I'm doing. That's where I'm hoping I can get this podcast to is, you know, just sustain. I don't need to be rich. I just need to sustain myself and eat good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big boy. I need to eat. I got two kids to feed.
Right on.
So, well, one and a half. The other one's 24. She can feed herself.
Yeah.
well, cool. Well, so let's do the fun questions.
Okay.
Where, first off, and I'm an added one. You gave me an idea for one earlier and I wrote it down. So what is your favorite current comic series?
My favorite current comic series?
Yeah.
What? Oh, my favorite current. I mean, I haven't been reading a lot of it, but I'm really liking the absolute universe that DC is doing and just taking these, like sometimes like 80-year-old characters and just doing something completely different with them.
Issue one of the Batman, Absolute Batman, where Alfred gets shot. where mm-hmm. he shoots Alfred. I'm like, what is going on? But like, that was crazy.
And it's also frustrating. Like, why did it take 80 years to be like, hey, let's make Bruce poor?
Right. Like, that was, yeah. I'm reading the Batman, the Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
The Green Lantern. The only one I haven't read yet is the Superman one. The others I've been reading. Yeah.
I mean, I just taking those, what they've done, and just flipping it on its head. And I'm like, this, yep. That's cool. That is really cool.
The Wonder Woman's been really good. The Wonder Woman and Batman are my favorites mm-hmm. so far. The Green Lantern's okay. I'm still yep. trying to get into it. The Flash is getting better. Issue one of The Flash, I was like, I don't know. Yeah. But it's getting better. The Martian Manhunter's kind of out there. Mm-hmm. I'm not smart. I may not be smart enough to read that book. it's kind of trippy. But yeah, those are the Absolute series for sure. Yeah. Very good. I agree. For sure. All right, cool. So what was your first favorite superhero?
Okay.
As far back as you can remember.
So
I know, you know.
My first superhero or my first comic?
The comic's next. So first okay. superhero.
First superhero. I have favorite always, superhero. I have always been a Hulk fan.
Okay.
Like, just because, like, by definition, he's not a superhero. You know, he's a tragic hero. He doesn't like what he is. And just, again, like, that psychology element of it. And I know it's gotten, like, way trippier, but I'm talking like just like classic Bruce Banner, Savage Hulk. This idea of like this thing in me that I don't like, I don't understand, it completely ruins my life. And like having to just learn to manage that. And I mean, like the symbolism of like the monster within us and what we're all capable of. And it, you know, I just, like, I always liked those, but I also always liked those big bruiser, you know, characters. Like, I always just enjoyed those characters. So, like, Hulk has always been, like, my favorite character, like, ever for all those awesome. Reasons.
All right. So, what about your favorite first, you know, the first, do you remember the first comic you ever read?
I do.
It was, all right. What is it?
It was Werewolf by Night number one.
Okay.
There was a little five and dime shop, like little hobby shop, card shop, you know, down on the corner yeah. from my house. And it was where some of the local kids hung out. They had a pool table. They had some arcade games in the back. And, you know, I've always liked monsters and, you know, just stuff like that. And werewolves were always like my favorite, like monster. And I remember they had some boxes of comics, and I remember like saying like, hey, do you guys like have any werewolf comics? And cause I was like 7 or 8 and didn't know. And he's like, I don't know. He's like, you can look in these boxes, and he put up 3, I think they were like, they weren't long boxes. They were the short boxes,
shorter boxes. Yeah.
And I just start looking through them and, oddly enough, and I kid you not, like the last comic on the last box was Werewolf by Night number one. And at the time it was 50 cents. At least that's the sticker he had on it. I didn't have 50 cents because I was 7. So I go home, talk to my mom, take the trash out a couple times. She gives me the 50 right. cents. I go back and I buy the comic. And then, you know, read, got that, found the second issue, found the third issue. And then as you get older, you know, you get rid of all your comics and stuff like that, or they get gotten rid of for you.
For you. Yeah. Yeah.
And then yeah. I remember I was at a show. Yeah. Yeah. And you just cry because you see like the values yeah. of them now. And
all right, this is a point where, all right, if you want to see the rest of this episode, you have to subscribe and pay for the therapy session.
But that's, kind of, that's what I'm getting to a little bit is like,
right?
I was at a show walking around. I think it was like a show in Massachusetts. I was just bopping around for the day, and I was like, you know what? Like, I want to buy that first comic because I've seen it, Like, it's not this super rare thing. And like,
right.
And I went and like, I know I paid 50 cents for that comic. There were people selling that same comic for like close to $100. I found it and I ended up paying $45 for it. And again, And like, I'm not looking, and it wasn't like a CGC, like 9 point, because again, it's right. Not like, it's not this super rare comic, but I wanted it just for the nostalgic purposes. And I still have it in my room on my shelf. And but like, yeah, I paid 50 cents for that. And then I turn around and I'm paying almost $50 for it.
Wow. That's awesome. Let's see. If you could live in any comic book universe, which one would you choose?
I mean, like, there's no good answer to this.
There is. And it's not out yet. But the last episode I did, or no, actually it is out. The episode I released yesterday, he had a really good answer. He said Peanuts.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, nothing bad happens in Snoopy world.
No, I mean, the worst case is like, what, like Lucy picks up the football or whatever.
The football, right, yeah. I was shocked when he said that answer. I was like, I would have never thought about it, because like you, I was like, man, yeah. None of them are good. Yours don't seem bad. Universe.
There's monsters and stuff, and you know, stuff happens. I mean, they're there. It's sort of like this, like, under like this world under the world, and every now and then it comes up and you got to deal with it. And I don't right. know, I would, you know, I mean, I would say, yeah, either Peanuts or like maybe like just one of those like slice of life anime worlds or whatever, or you know, I don't know, just like, you know, people figuring out daily life kind of stuff, like the Snoopy one. Yeah, that, you know, maybe like Calvin and Hobbes or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, something like that, just to avoid Gotham City and Metropolis.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to live in Gotham or
no. You know,
Marvel, or, you know, the world's ending every other day.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. All right. So if you could have any superpower, which I think you already have one, but if you could have any superpower, which would you choose?
Probably. I'm not very fast, so like super speed maybe. Okay. You know, time manipulation feels too dicey, you know. Probably like super speed. My wife would probably appreciate that.
That's awesome. Super speed, I love it.
All right.
So if you could, have a comic book character, any character that was your sidekick in life, which would it be? Who would it be?
Probably, I don't know. Superman feels too easy. I don't know. But the guy that said the Flash, that was, I'm like, okay, yeah, no, I can see that.
Right? Yeah, he's like, yeah, the Flash. He could just get me out of the way and, you know, go to handle business and I'm safe.
Yeah, I don't know, I kind of want to say, like, maybe, like, Doctor Strange or Doctor Fate or something, just because possibilities are kind of limitless.
That's, yeah, I like that. All right. If your life were a comic book, what would the title be?
I don't know. I'm toying between like two different titles that kind of come to mind. One is like Wonderful Absurdity, just because like, you know, yes, the world offers no shortage of things to complain about and be mad about and, you know, irritated by, and tons of negativity out there. But like every now and then, if you like able to kind of step back and like turn your head a little bit and like look at something or something going on, it's like, oh, like this is actually like not that the negativity or any of that's great, but like you, there are other things out there of like, oh, this is really cool. And there are people that can just laugh and have fun and not take everything so seriously and enjoy that little bit of absurdity in the world, you know, that fun little absurdity. Or the other title would be like kind of like the first line from Neil deGrasse Tyson's book, Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. The first line in the book was just like, the universe is under no obligation to make sense to you.
That's really good.
I'd probably go with the second one.
Yeah, I like that. That's pretty good. Well, I really do think you have a superpower. You're helping people every day get better. So I think that's awesome. You've created an awesome story. You're doing the work. You're going to table more than one event a year. Maybe we'll get you there.
We'll try.
Build you a website. Start selling some books.
We'll make a plan to do one next year. We'll table the same.
There you go. We should do that. I think that's a brilliant plan. So you keep hounding me in Instagram and Messenger, and we'll make it happen.
Right on.
But I really appreciate you hanging out with me. It's been a great time. Anything else to wrap it up?
No, I mean, I just thank you for the opportunity, man. Like,
thank you, guys. The community's been awesome.
In a world of heroes, villains, and epic stories,
Braha, Onicon, and their ultimate sidekick, Panel P, take you on adventures each week.
Showing off their comic book hauls,
fun trivia and games, honest reviews,
and inspiring conversations with the creators and consumers who make it all possible.
Join in on the conversation.
This is Talking Comics.